afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, April 24th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hey, Melody.
Any special day today to you?
I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of special. I guess it is, at least to me.
Yes?
The big 7-0.
Is it today?
Huh?
Is it today?
Yeah, I know.
I didn't know. I didn't know. I was just didn't want to say happy Friday.
Well, that's
well,
what
HB.
It is. Happy birthday to me. Happy
no
birthday
wonder you've
to
been,
me.
No wonder you've been cranky when I was talking to you earlier.
Well, like I said, I just reflect the mood of people around me. That's all.
I'm always happy.
Uh-huh.
Well, HB.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Happy 49, 39, 60.
70.
71? You're going to admit the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually surprising because, you know, when you're younger and the rest of you say, oh, my God, somebody's 70 years old. They're really ancient. This isn't bad. Right? This is not a painful time of life for me. I'm not in bad physical condition and the rest of that sort of thing. I seem to be doing okay. And, you know, I have work to do that I really enjoy. And this is... I mean, this is, I would have thought even 30 years ago, 20 years ago, oh, my God, 70, you know, you're just about dead or something. No, it doesn't appear to be so, you know. At this age, you can go at any time. Anybody can, you know, you get to this point and there's no telling how much longer you're going to last. But, I don't know, for the moment, I really don't feel the way I imagined 70 would feel. If anything, I feel like I'm 45, maybe 50. I don't think that's unusual. I don't think that's unusual, but I think back to my grandparents, for example. All right? I don't think any of my grandparents even lived to be 70 years old. And I know their 60s were complicated with medical problems and vision problems and rest of that sort of thing. And I've had virtually none of that, thank God. And, you know.
When it happens, it'll happen real quick.
Well, I hope so.
But, you know, it's interesting, Al. My grandparents, my grandmother lived, she was 83. My grandfather was 92.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. My grandfather didn't have health issues until his late 80s. My grandmother, you know, she was diabetic and heart problems. So she still lived a long time, even with those issues back then. And it's interesting, I'm 60, I'll be 61 in July, and you're right, it's the only time I feel any different is when I walk by a mirror and I see someone that I don't
feel there.
And
there goes your mom.
There's my mom.
What's my mom doing in the mirror? I must be having a vision. Mom is trying to talk to me. Oh, no, that's me talking to myself, isn't it?
So to correct that problem, you just eliminate mirrors, and the world is great.
I agree, unless they have good mirrors. You know, I'll tell you something. The mirror in the bathroom.
Not the carnival mirrors.
The mirror in the bathroom. I see myself in the mirror in the bathroom, and I'll tell you something. I do not look 70 years old, but if I go to get a haircut and I see myself in the mirror, it's like, oh, my gosh, you know. It's like... It depends. You know, there's good mirrors and there's bad mirrors. The one at the barber shop is a bad mirror. The one in the bathroom, pretty good, you know. So.
Well, I'll tell you that's true about mirrors. And I don't look my age. I mean, people think I'm still in my 40s. But I remember watching a Jerry Seinfeld where he's dating this lady. And in certain air, in certain light, and so forth, he sees her. One minute she's just beautiful, and then he sees her in a different light, and then she's just like, you know, this big nose, big, you know, she's not as attractive. And it's true. I mean, and we see ourselves that way. We see other people that way too. I can see a person and I think, oh, they're really attractive. And wow, what happened? The light changed. So it's
either
painful.
That or your eyes fluctuate. That's my problem.
I don't know what.
Eyes get better, they get worse. It's, you know, there's a certain amount. I think maybe that has to do with just my eyes.
You think? It's all about the light. And so, anyway, let's see what...
In the movies, they say, go to the light, go to the light.
To
and
the
you get
light.
Older, maybe not. You know, light is fine when you're younger and you're still good looking and the rest of that sort of thing. As you get older, maybe the light, I don't know. So, what's the market?
Well, let's go to the light in gold. Let's go to the gold light. And they did a number in gold today, down 1580 at the moment, 1178. And silver, the same thing, down 12 cents at 1583. Platinum was down 13 at 1126, along with palladium down 1 at 773. And let's see. USDX down 38 at 96.93. Crude oil down 53 at 57.21. And I haven't had a chance to follow the paper markets today. The Dow's up 2 points at 18060. The NASDAQ up 33 at 5089. I mean, there's some momentum there in that NASDAQ passing the 15-year high and closing above it yesterday. So you've got a little bit of momentum in there. The S&P up 3 at 2116. 10-year yield 1.92%. The Euro popped up at 109. And Asian markets overnight, Hong Kong keeps running 250 to the upside. Japan settled almost down 1% at 166 to the downside. German London, very little change there. And I was reading an article today, Alfred.
Yes.
And, I mean, I do have the durable good numbers to give out. But it's the HSBC Bank, the global bank, is considering moving its headquarters from Britain. And because of all the increased regulation because of the banking crisis so many years ago. And we've
moving
already talked.
Moving it to where?
Well, they didn't mention where. It just says that they're thinking about moving its headquarters because of the tougher regulation since the 2008 financial crisis. But the real question is there's 2 weeks before Britain has a national election. And David Cameron has promised to hold a referendum on whether to leave the Eurozone if he is reelected. And I would think most of the Brits would want to leave, even though they don't use the euro currency. They still use their own currency. And so I didn't hear that. Or at least I can't recall that I heard anywhere else up until today. I truly haven't been following their election process over there, so it might have been in the news previous to this. But I found that interesting. I don't think it would have the same impact as Greece has because they don't use the same currency. On the other hand, I know they have a lot of problems. I know the people do not like all the immigration. They do not like all the Muslims coming into the country. They've had a huge influx of Muslims, and you know they don't like it. That's what I was told, and so I just found that interesting.
Well,
does it mean anything? I don't know, but it's interesting.
You know, one of the interesting things in all of this is you mentioned you don't know if England leaves the Eurozone. Would it have as much impact as Greece leaving the Eurozone?
I don't think so.
Well, it's hard to know, but when we talk about one of the things that's interesting to me, and I'm writing an article on it for this week's edition of the American Survival, what kind of impact will it have if Greece defaults on its debt? And everyone is looking at this and saying, oh my gosh, you know, holy cow, the sky will definitely fall. The Greek economy will collapse. It could collapse the European Union economy. It could collapse the global economy. There's no telling how far these repercussions could go. This is a terrible problem. And they've been doing this for 5 years now. The Greek debt problem has been going on for 5 years. And they've previously, they've cut it in half. They wiped out half of the Greek debt. They now owe over 300 billion euros. They apparently did owe over 600 billion. They cut it in half. They wiped out half the debt. The world didn't come to an end. What if they wipe out the other half? Will the world come to an end or not? There's a question that's rising in my mind where I'm wondering if Greece might not demonstrate the same sort of effect we saw in Iceland. You know, it was just a few years ago that, oh my gosh, Iceland was deep in debt. And the people of Iceland said, essentially, screw it. We're not paying. Ha! What do you think about that? And they had oh my gosh, the world's going to come. Nothing happened. Iceland had a difficult 18 to 24 months. They came back on track. They're now one of the stronger economies.
Well, I don't think their debt was as huge either.
No, I understand that. But my point is this. My point is, must we make a drama out of the Greek debt? Must the central bankers of the world, are they compelled to make a drama out of the Greek debt and extend and pretend and drag this thing out for longer and longer and longer? Because maybe Greece could default on its debt and not much would happen. You know, oh my God, the sky's going to fall. Maybe it won't.
If
Greece can default on its debt and the world doesn't come to an end, how many other debtors and debtor nations are going to sit back and say, you know, let's see, Iceland defaulted and it wasn't a big deal. Greece defaulted. It wasn't a big deal. Is it possible we could default too? And I don't mean by we, I don't necessarily mean the United States, but I mean debtors and debtor nations. There is, because the modern debt is denominated in fiat dollars. And those fiat dollars are nothing but illusions. They're not real money. They're no more real money than monopoly money. We just think it's, what happens if I lose all my monopoly money? Well, biggie of deal, I'm out of the monopoly game, but so what? It's only a game. What happens if I lose all my fiat dollars? Well, I'm out of the fiat dollar economy, but is that an economy or is it a game? If the fiat dollars are only illusory and they're not really money, then what is a debt denominated in fiat dollars? Is it a fiat debt? And if so, how significant is it? Now, I'm not here to argue, and it's not my argument that everybody can default on the debt and the world will be unaffected. But I am wondering if the banks are stringing Greece along because they would rather have Greece just, oh, yeah, we'll pay the debt. Maybe not this year or next year, but someday, sometime. They'd rather have Greece promise that they'll pay the debt somehow than have Greece said, sorry, we've defaulted, we can't pay, that's it, and then watch Greece restore its economy. You know, there's at times in this country, if you went bankrupt, as soon as your bankruptcy petition your bankruptcy was completed, you could expect to see a horde of credit card offers coming at you as banks, knowing you couldn't file for bankruptcy for another 7 years, they said, this guy is a good credit risk. On top of which, he doesn't have any debt. He is debt free. Plus, he can't file for bankruptcy for 7 years, so we can give him a credit card. Their credit was actually increased by wiping out their previous debt, declaring bankruptcy, and starting fresh. It's not impossible that a lot of financiers, they charge a high interest rate, I get that. But there'd be people willing to invest in Greece if Greece defaulted, because Greece would no longer be overly indebted. Right? And it wouldn't be likely. I wouldn't say it's impossible. There's no law preventing it, but it would be at least unlikely that Greece would go through another default in the near future. Greece might default, see that its access to credit was increased dramatically. Greece might actually, it'd take a, there'd be a difficult 18, 24 months. I don't doubt that. But Greece might be restored in fairly short order. So, well, is that true? I don't know, but I'm just raising that possibility. And I'm saying maybe the banks don't want the world to understand that you can default on this fiat monetary debt, and it ain't no big thing.
Well, the thing of it is, if they default, they're going to be like another Argentina. They're not fixing any of the problems. They have it's a socialist country. They have so many social programs. So many people are dependent on the government. What do they produce? All they produce basically is olive oil. Okay, tourism. What else do they do? I mean, they don't have the ability in order to sustain what they pay to the citizens. So they will end up just like Argentina doing the same thing. They'll default this time, then again. I think the problem, and I agree, I don't think it's going to be as big of a deal. Now, Greece defaulted 2 years ago or 3 years ago. Yeah, I think it would have been a little bit different situation. But the whole markets, the world has pretty much become immune to the problems of Greece and to the situation. And
I'm just bored by it. It's like watching reruns.
I'm sure everybody has positioned themselves for this deal. My thought with Britain pulling out of the European Union, along with Greece, it really shows that these countries can do it. They can go out on their own. And to me, I think with having another country do it, even though they don't do the currency, it would show just how weak that zone is, and is it how fractured it is, and could that whole zone of those 28 countries, now 20, you know, 7, 26, 25, you know, would they continue? And, you know, and then you might see other ones pull out, whether, you know, and so.
Well, once it starts to go, we are certainly in difficult times. I'm not trying to say everything's going to be copacetic no matter what happens. But with Greece, maybe it's not going to be as big a problem as a lot of people fear. That's point one. As for the European Union, you know, a lot of people think that it is so fundamentally flawed that inevitably it's going to have some sort of a collapse and disintegration. Now, is that going to happen this year, 5 years from now? Who knows? But much could be the same could be said for the United States. You know, we are in many regards just as vulnerable to some sort of a disintegration as the former Soviet Union was when it blew up in 1990. Right? People would have, but a year or two before that happened, would anyone have believed that the almighty evil empire, that it was even possible for it to disintegrate? And the answer is no, nobody believed that. Nobody anticipated it. And then all of a sudden, the Soviet Union was gone. There are lots of things happening where, because we live in a world that has become irrational. And much of that goes back, in my opinion, to the idea that we can treat debt as if it's wealth. And the more you owe, the wealthier you are. You know? Again, we've got people are using their MasterCard, pay off their Visa, pay off their American Express. They appear to be wealthy. They are, in fact, in great debt. As a nation, we fit that description to some degree. What's going to happen? I mean, inevitably, we have to deal with the truth. The only question is when. Can we postpone, can we kick the can down the road and avoid the truth for another year or 2 years or 5 years? Or is the truth about to seize us by the throat and shake us like a rag doll? Huh? That truth is going to get us sooner or later. And everybody's going to sit back and say, oh, there's all kinds of things that can't happen. We couldn't see the European Union disintegrate. We couldn't see China disintegrate. And I give you that it is improbable that China would fall apart. It has been fairly cohesive nation for centuries. It's not likely to happen. There's cultural reasons. I get that. But on the other hand, you see the problems they face in China with pollution and overpopulation and not enough of this, that, and the other. Nothing is impossible right now. Virtually everything is on the table when it comes to what might happen. So, I don't know. We live in uncertain times. We live in unstable times. What do you do? Protect yourself as best you can. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we will be back in about 2.5-3 minutes. Please stay tuned.
Is your PSA count high? Half of all men over 50 have an enlarged prostate. You can shrink your prostate without harmful drugs or risky surgery. The secret to healing the prostate is to cleanse the prostate and the liver. Call Apothecary Herbs to ask about the Prostate Kit for a comprehensive way to heal and soothe your prostate. Educate yourself on how easy it can be to disinfect, cleanse, and restore your prostate gland. Call Apothecary Herbs for the Prostate Kit and successfully reduce swelling, inflammation, dissolve stones, and cleanse the blood to obtain the results you need. Money-back guarantee with every purchase. Call the experts in organ cleansing. Call Apothecary Herbs now for the Prostate Kit and empower yourself. Toll free 866-229-3663 or international callers 704-875-8010. That's toll free 866-229-3663 or visit the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Frank, thanks very much for that. I'd prefer something a little snappier, tell you the truth. That was, you know, it's a little bit like, well, Grandma, can you hear us, Grandma? Huh? We're going to play Happy Birthday for you now. A little more jazz, you know, a little more rock and roll would suit me. But nevertheless, thank you. Appreciate it. I'm Alfred Addisk. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. It's my birthday, and I'll cry if I want to. And so Frank is playing birthday music for me. There's an article. Melody, do you have something you want
to say? Yeah, I do. I just wanted to mention today, before we get to the durable good orders numbers, Monday we're going to have I did a little comparison on some online sellers of gold and silver, and I just did some bullion samples, and I want to do a couple of other coins, and I'll be bringing that, and perhaps it'll be in our newsletter. You can sign up for our newsletter at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com for the newsletter, and it always amazes me when people call and they want to know if I can match prices with an online seller of gold and silver. And it's very difficult to compare apples to apples because the online sellers of gold and silver, I think their websites are very confusing. It's confusing as far as dates of coin. They'll say you can buy this coin as low as this price, but that's if you buy a large volume. So people think that they're actually getting that low price when they're doing shopping comparisons. So they can become, it's very confusing. So I thought I would go online and make sure that I'm doing an apples to apples comparison, and I'll try to get that into the newsletter this week, and we'll go over that on the program on Monday. So for all your gold and silver coin needs, give us a call, folks, at 1-800-375-4188. All the specials we had this week are continuing, so give us a call at 800-375-4188. U.S. durable good orders was the biggest gain in 8 months, but let's get to the nitty-gritty of the report, and we'll show you that, they like to spin the headlines to make people think, oh, that's all I need to read as opposed to the biggest gain in 8 months. Things are doing good. But let's get into purchases of long-lasting manufactured goods. Durable goods in March jumped by the largest amount. But if you take a closer look at the details, businesses kept pruning their investment plans in the face of a softening U.S. economy. So the orders to factories for durable goods rebounded 4% in March after a 1.4% in decline. But the result was led by a big jump in demand for commercial aircraft. Boeing has just announced a huge deal with Panama, in which Obama and the president of Panama was a part of. And so I'm not sure, that was the beginning of April. So I'm not sure if those numbers were part of this commercial aircraft numbers for the durable goods, or if it'll show up next month. But so you kind of wonder, where would this durable goods be without commercial aircraft? Outside of the transportation category, orders fell for a sixth straight month. So if you eliminate this sector, transportation, there was a 0.5% drop in demand in this key category. So the treat followed a 2.2% drop in February and marked the seventh straight monthly decline. But you're not going to see the word decline in the headline, are you? So again, another sign that this world and this economy and this country is just not as strong as what they want us to believe.
Well, the signs of that are all over.
They're all over.
If you care to look about it, it's not exactly news. It's a function more of courage. You look at it and you say, what shall I do about this? And what does this indicate for the future?
Well, most people don't read past the headlines. And when they see the headlines like that, they see the spin and they think things are, things are pretty rosy. Things are getting better. Really?
See, I'm not like that, Melody. I'm an intellectual. I not only read the headline, I read the first paragraph.
Do you read the first paragraph?
Yeah. And that's how I manage to stay informed. I'm a paragraph ahead of everyone else, you see?
Mm-hmm.
Keeps you at the front of the pack. You know, there's just obvious fundamental principle for investing. You buy low and sell high if you want to make a profit. If you see an item for sale, that you see something that you'd like to buy, you consider investing in, you don't want to buy it when it's at its maximum price. You want to buy it at its lowest price. And then you sit back and wait for it to rise from its lowest price on up. Inevitably, it'll go up to a higher price. And when it does, then you sell it. And the difference between its low price and its higher price is your profit. If you buy at the highest peak and the price falls, you're going to lose money. Well, here's an article based on that same idea, that touches on that same idea, from Casey Research, just a couple of brief remarks, a couple of paragraphs, and it says the headline is the price of gold is near its all-time low in real terms. The government has been understating inflation for decades. We asked John Williams at shadowstats.com to measure the real price of gold using more realistic inflation data. What he found is amazing. Adjusted for inflation, the real price of gold right now is approaching its 2001 low. Now, that means that if you're inclined to buy low and sell high, this is the time to buy. The nominal price of gold stayed below $300 an ounce throughout 2001 and fell as low as $256 per ounce. Subsequently, however, gold rose to $410 in 2005 and over $1,900 by 2011. Now, the implication, if smart investors buy low and sell high, gold is currently selling at a low comparable to that of 2001, just before it began a bull run that increased the price by 650% over the next 10 years. If it's true that the fundamental principle of investing is buy low, sell high, now is the time to buy gold. We're seeing lows, and they are probably as low, and after adjusted for inflation, according to Williams, they are as low as they have been in 14, 15 years. So, although the nominal price is certainly up, the purchasing power has been degraded significantly, as has the purchasing power of stocks and bonds and virtually everything else, in part because the dollar has continued to grow in value due to, or the dollar has at least recently grown in value due to deflation, and so on. But the point, buy low, sell high, it's low right now, and now's the time to buy. What else, Melody?
And, you know, it's interesting, too, because today I think we had probably more calls of late today about people wanting to know why the price of gold is going down when things are so bad. You know, they're thinking, should they sell and so forth. No one sold, but certainly when they're beginning to think to sell and maybe go into paper investments, that really tells me we're closer to the bottom than anybody thinks, because they're interested in going into the paper markets at these levels. And it's like, really? You want to sell your gold and go into the paper markets? You got to be kidding me. And so they need to understand, and you have to remember why you buy gold. And it is a long-term investment. And you hold on to it. Things have not changed. Things are going to continue to work, to get worse. And I don't see anything, as long as we're on a fiat currency, that we're on a path, it's not going to change. And when you, I mean, look around you, look at not just economically, but socially and morally and everything else. I mean, it's, and yes, it's, people can still say it's great here. Yes. Today, Al, there is a report coming out. Switzerland is the happiest place on earth.
I thought that was Disneyland.
America is 15th.
Yeah, I know.
The list is dominated by European nations, particularly those in Scandinavia. Switzerland is now the happiest nation. Iceland, the most rapid riser. Reasons range from strong GDP to the beautiful scenery and a vibrant culture. The UK ranks at a lowly 21. Brits, although, seem happier now than back in 2012. So what's really changed for the Brits in two, three years? Not much. World's least happy nations are unsurprisingly places ravaged by war and extreme poverty, like Syria, blah, blah, blah. So Switzerland is the world's happiest nation, and thanks to the healthy GDP figures. And we're number 15.
You know, that's, and nobody wants to talk about in the government, and we have fallen from number one to number 15. We've gone from the world's biggest creditor nation. We loaned to the world. Now we're the world's largest debtor nation. Right? We were the industrial powerhouse of the world. Now we our industries have been diminished dramatically. And this has all been done with the complicity of your government. Right? We have fallen dramatically since peaking in 1960s. 50s, 60s, maybe even into the 70s. But certainly since we went on to a pure fiat currency, the United States has fallen further and further and further. And government's solution to all of our problems, if they bother to mention what those problems are, is we need more government. Just vote for bigger government, and they will get money or create money or steal money, but somehow they'll get it, and they'll give it to you, the little people. Bunch of crap. Anybody who wants to see this country restored to prosperity Anyone who wants to see a resurrection of the American dream, first thing you do is you cut the size of government by 50%. The fundamental, the primary enemy to the people of the United States of America is the government of the United States. And a lot of people say, oh, that's crazy talk, that's radical talk, that's, you know, no, it's not. The founding fathers, I've gone through this a number of times, but the founding fathers understood that the principal enemy of the people of the United States of America was then and would always be our own government. Government likes to point a finger and say, oh, the terrorists or somebody. They've always got some foreign adversary. They've got somebody to point at, they're the bad guys. No, the government is the bad guys. And we need to understand it, and we need to embrace that idea. Not because we need to go shoot people, but because we need to understand that government is fundamentally contrary to our best interests. And the more government we have, the less prosperity, the less freedom we're going to have. There's no other way around it. Founders, why did they give us three branches of government? To keep the government fighting with itself rather than uniting to go after us. Why did they give us the right to keep and bear arms? It's to defend ourselves against big government. That's what it's for, and it's not a radical thought. This is borne out by the preamble to the Bill of Rights, where they tell us the purpose of the First Ten Amendments. Government document. You can find it on the Internet, under .gov websites. The preamble of the document came to be called the preamble of the Bill of Rights. It says the purpose of the First Ten Amendments, or the proposed amendments, there were actually 13, maybe 17, according to some people, but at least 13 amendments were proposed. The states ratified 10. Those 10 became the Bill of Rights. Purpose, to prevent misconstruction or abuse of the powers of the Constitution. That's what it says. That's not me. It's not some crazy guy. The Second Amendment, the right to keep and bear arms, is intended to prevent misconstruction or abuse of the powers of the Constitution. Who has powers under the Constitution? Not me. You don't. Most of you don't. The only ones who have powers under the Constitution are those officers and employees of the federal government. The Second Amendment is intended from the beginning to protect us, and it's not by just showing them how clean you keep your rifle. The First Amendment, the same thing with the right to free speech and press, assembly, right? These are all intended to prevent misconstruction or abuse of the powers of the Constitution, and the only people that have powers under the Constitution, not rights, powers. It's the officers and employees of the federal government. First Amendment is intended to protect the people of the states of the Union against the government of the United States. And the document reads elections every 2 years. Why? They were hoping that people would pay attention. And you would say, look, that guy's a treasonous whore. Get him out. That guy's a treasonous whore. Get him out. Give him 2 years. And if they don't prove that they're really up to doing the right thing for this country, we should eject them. Instead, we watch Dancing with the Stars. We have neglected our duty to pay close attention to whatever the government is doing and to make the SOBs stop whenever it's necessary to protect not just the Constitution, but your rights and my rights and the American dream. All of this can be protected if we will follow the fundamental precepts that are enshrined in our Constitution and other organic documents. We have neglected our duty, and as a result, we are on the edge of something extraordinarily painful. Right? We just it's not impossible. I'm not saying this is likely. I'm not doing fear mongering and the rest and say, oh yeah, the whole thing's gonna fall apart and disintegrate. No, it probably won't. But we are not moving closer to freedom. We are moving further away from it. I doubt that there's anyone listening to this program right now who doesn't understand that we are moving closer and closer to an overt police state. We're not becoming more free. We are becoming more regulated, less prosperous, more taxed, more, you know, less free. And as a result, there's a price to be paid here if we're going to be stupid, irresponsible, and self-serving. There is something to be saved if we're willing to be responsible and pay attention and learn and stand up and speak out. If we won't do it now, it'll only be that much more difficult later on. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with Salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. We're back on Financial Survival. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom. Here's an article from Casey Research, and it's been duplicated in a number of other publications. They've run on the same idea. You may have seen it yourself if you subscribed to any newsletters. Popped out probably three, four different places. Same idea has popped out three, four different places in publications just in the last 24 hours or so. And what they're based on is someone with a certain amount of, who knows, he might know what he's talking about, a bank official, I can't remember who it was. But he was quoted in Bloomberg as saying the problem we're having with the government right now and the economy could be resolved if they would get away from cash and go to an all-digital currency. Well, it didn't go solve the problems, right? But if we went to an all-digital currency, the only thing it's going to do is make it easier for government to spy on us. They'll be aware of every transaction. They'll be aware of how much money you have, how much you spend. They'll be able to calculate what your real income is for the year, what your taxes should be. It gives government a great deal of control. And here's an article again from Casey Research. Doug Casey, you understand who I think most of you recognize who I'm talking about. Headline is, governments want to enslave you with digital cash. Government wants to get rid of physical cash in the same sense they wanted to get rid of physical money, gold and silver. Government wants to get rid of physical cash. Paper currency is just too private. Digital cash is much easier to track, tax, and confiscate. The U.S. government is just waiting for the right opportunity, which Casey Research contributor Jeff Thomas believes will be the next financial crisis. Politicians will blame it on the people who hoard their cash. Good citizens, you see, give their cash to the bank for safekeeping. We can't have people hiding cash outside the system under their mattresses, and therefore that'll be an excuse for getting rid of physical cash and subjecting us to a purely digital monetary system. It's an interesting argument. I'm not convinced by it. I don't doubt that government wants a digital system. But it's not easily done, right? It's not as easy to implement as some might suppose. What are you going to do with the homeless people? Where are they going to get a card? What are we going to do, give them a card that's constantly being recharged every month. You get another $600-$700 or whatever it is.
What
we give
they
homeless.
Do with food stamps.
Well, I understand it's possible.
So it's not that
done.
Far away.
It can be done, but
just like anything
there's
else,
a question: can the homeless people handle it?
They'll just eliminate.
What I mean
the
by
homeless.
That is, a lot of homeless people really are just mentally ill. If they can't pay and handle for cash, what are they going to do? Buy some food? Can they keep track of their little card and the rest, that sort of thing? You know, being homeless is not just a question of being financially, you know, embarrassed for at least a significant percentage. There's a question of mental illness and drug addiction and God knows what else is going on here. What are you going to do with the illegal aliens? How do illegal aliens get cards that allow them to buy things, and how does the government, I don't know if the government would like to do that. We can have somebody sitting at the border, and you can just go through, if you're a legal alien, come on over here, and we'll give you your card. We don't need to know your name or anything else. Just come on in, we'll give you a card, guarantee you. How much did we give them? Only
700? They already almost do the same thing.
I understand that, but I'm still saying that digital cash is not as easy. A transition to digital cash is not as easy as the man who spoke out and was reported on Bloomberg, not as easy as he suggests, but I have no doubt they would like to push us in that direction. I would like to push back. I would like to see, you know, I'll watch an old Perry Mason movie when, I don't remember who he was, Raymond Burr, that starred as Perry Mason back in the 50s and 60s.
I love that.
And you'll see sometimes that they'll have a drama on there where they will open up a little box that's hidden under the floorboard or whatever, and they find a number of U.S. currency notes, dollar bills, that are denominated in terms of $1,000, $10,000. And the average person would think, what the heck is that? We can't get a dollar bill more than $500, or excuse me, more than $1. But back when I was a kid, I don't know what the maximum was. They may have had $100,000 bills. You could move a lot of currency under the pretext of protecting us from the drug dealers. I said, we're going to shut down the currency to where there's nothing larger than a $100 bill. Well, how did that work? Did that stop the importation of drugs into this country? And did anyone even suppose it might? Hasn't affected the drug dealers. It's affected you and me. It means that you can't walk around with a $100,000 bill sewed into your wallet or into the hem of your skirt. And people, it wouldn't be detectable. You could move your money from here to Panama, Argentina, Europe, right? Who'd pick up on it? Oh, they might have the little strips in them now. But even so, it makes it a lot more convenient to move money around. Government wants to know what you're doing with your money, and there is no reason to believe they want that knowledge to better serve you. When Casey says government wants to enslave you with digital cash, that's not just hyperbole. There's a point to that. And a number of other publications that were embracing the same theme just in the last day or two, and it's an idea, I won't say it's an idea whose time has come, but it's an idea that's banging around, and it's not unreasonable or irrational. Government really does want to control, you know, government doesn't need to know everything you or I buy and purchase. Government doesn't need to know how much money I'm spending or where I'm spending it, but they want to. Because they say you got to keep an eye on that guy. Got to keep an eye on him. We can use this as leverage. We can find out, oh my gosh, he's done something. He bought himself what? Whatever. Something. And they can use it to create evidence that maybe it's time to take people off the air and put them in the slammer or subject them to some sort of criminal or civil penalty. What's wrong with freedom? You know, it's like the $100 bill. Biggest you can have in your wallet right now is a $100 bill. After we calculate for inflation, a $100 bill is equivalent to the $5 bill my dad and my grandfather used to pack in their wallets when I was a kid. And if you come show up with a bill that's for $10,000 or $100,000 or whatever, that would be a crime. That would be equivalent, I don't know, to my dad or my grandfather having $100 bill, $500 bill, whatever. It can't be a crime. This world is better off in the end. I know that some people would use and do use cash in order to obscure their income, and they do it to defeat income taxes. But what I'm going to say is that we are better off with people. We are better off taking whatever losses are incurred by people who don't pay their income taxes than we are by empowering the government to be more aggressive in going after anybody that crosses their bow. We're better off, even though freedom might mean there's going to be a few more con artists running around, a few more people not paying their taxes. We're better off with more freedom and less taxes. We're better off with more freedom and less government regulation. So here's another article along that same line. This was an email that came in today, and it's a list of executive orders. And it says, during our lifetimes, all presidents have issued executive orders for various reasons. Some have issued more than others. Eisenhower issued 2 executive orders in 8 years. Kennedy issued 4 in 3 years. LBJ, 4 in 5 years. Nixon issued only 1 executive order in 6 years in the White House. Ford issued 3 in 2 years. Carter, 3 in 4 years. Reagan, 5 in 8 years. Bush Sr., 3 in 4 years. And then we get to Clinton. All right, Clinton put out 15 executive orders in 8 years. He started a trend. George W. Bush, 62 executive orders in 8 years. Obama has issued more than 1,000 executive orders, and the numbers rise and continues to rise in 6 years. Now, the reason this is important is because we are supposed to have a government where each of the 3 distinct branches of government are confined to one set of powers. The executive branch is supposed to enforce the law. The judicial branch is supposed to interpret the law. The legislative branch is supposed to make the law. But when we allow the president to issue all these executive orders, he's making law. That's what's happening. It is a violation of the fundamental principles of the Constitution. And it is evidence that Obama is functioning as a dictator, or is at least laying the foundation for a dictatorship. Although he may not be implementing all of the executive orders, for example, Executive Order 10,990 allows the government to take over all modes of transportation and control highways and seaports. In the event of some sort of an economic, financial, or military emergency, the government can take over transportation. They're not necessarily doing it now, but the executive order is there. It says they can if they have to. 10,995 applies the same powers over communication. 10,997 allows control of electrical power, gas, petroleum, and so on. 10,998, all food resources and farms. 11,000 allows the government to mobilize civilians into work brigades under government supervision. This means the government come knock on your door and say, come on out here, you're going to work. Doing what? Well, we got a road we need to build. Bring your pick and your shovel. That's what this is allowing for. It goes on. They go registration of all persons through the postmaster, aircraft and airports, relocate communities, designate areas to be abandoned. They can do that under Executive Order 11,004, and the list goes on and on and on. They have 11,310, grants authority to the Department of Justice to enforce the plans set out in the executive orders to institute industrial support and establish judicial and legislative liaison to control aliens, to operate penal and correctional institutions, and to advise and assist the president. They go on, they're talking about creating a dictatorship where the president can do anything he wants, anytime he wants, and they're passing executive orders that grant the Department of Justice power to enforce, the judiciary powers to interpret in favor of executive orders, and it's all in favor of globalization of the economy. Obama's 1,000-plus executive orders are evidence that he and government anticipate some sort of emergency that will justify implementation of all these executive orders. That emergency will be financial or economic or military. That might be accidental, or it might be caused by the government itself. But Obama's 1,000-plus executive orders are evidence that your government is preparing for some variety of chaos that will rock this nation to its foundations. Under the guise of that crisis, this as yet unseen but anticipated crisis, we are being, they're laying the foundations for a dictatorship in this country. All of these executive orders, the government, Obama, passing laws, unilaterally, on his own say-so. It's treason to the Constitution. We're supposed to have three branches of government. All Obama is supposed to do is enforce the laws that are made by Congress. Instead, Congress said, we don't want to make any laws. Let you do it. You take the heat for it, President, and we'll go back and just collect political campaign contributions. Congress is derelict in its duty. They're handing over legislative authority to the President that the Constitution would never allow or tolerate. It is treason to our constitutional form of government. Congress is in support. The courts are in support. We are headed for something dangerous. You know, I think this next election is going to be perhaps, you know, we hear this all the time, that the next election is going to be the big one. This is going to, well, I don't know. You know, I've heard it before and it was never exactly true. Oops. Forgot. We're out of time, folks. We quit the first program at 55 rather than 58:30. All right, I'm Alfred Adams. Happy birthday to me. I'm here with Melody Cedarstrom. We'll be back tomorrow, or on Monday. Thanks for listening. In the meantime, have a good weekend. May the good Lord bless you, Melody, and thank you, producer. Bye.
Prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Closed, unemployment insurance running out, jobs leaving the country. Many people cannot afford to eat or keep a roof over their head. Too many can do neither. Messiah's Branch has a mission church in Wichita, Kansas that helps the victims of this banker's economy, the American people. Your neighbors. The mission is the last hope for so many Americans. We need your help to lift up the poorest of the poor. These are men, women, and children who once had homes, now in the street. They all need what you need. First aid, beds, food, clothing, and so on. You can send a monetary gift or a box of necessities to 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Or donate online by going to WichitaHomeless.com or simply call 316-619-4886. 316-619-4886.